Have you ever wondered how drones can help to develop climate-resilient agriculture? Do you know how remote sensors can help to protect rainforests? Or have you ever considered hiring a graphic designer online from Kenya? Welcome to Exploring Digital Spheres. This season is all about digital developments around the world. Follow our research team as they travel to 5 different countries to talk to experts from civil society, academia, and the private sector. We will address issues relating to digitalization, sustainability, the future of entrepreneurship and work around the globe.
In this episode, we visit Mexico City to explore the potentials and challenges of sustainable digital entrepreneurship to mitigate climate change. Not only is Mexico a country with rich cultural heritage, it's also home to a growing community of digital entrepreneurs who are creating innovative solutions to address pressing environmental and social challenges. From harnessing the power of data analytics for better resource management to developing digital platforms for social impact, Mexican entrepreneurs are a driving force towards a more sustainable future. However, they are also confronted with various economic, institutional, technological, or social challenges. Often, these entrepreneurs can only rely on themselves as there is still insufficient local governmental support. This certainly shows the strong entrepreneurial culture in Mexico, where people really want to make a change regardless of external circumstances. But digital technologies can also have negative impacts. For instance, they can reinforce social inequalities or encourage overconsumption. We talk to entrepreneurs as well as policymakers as part of our research to better understand the different opportunities and challenges in Mexico. My name is Christian Graufogel. I'm the project coordinator of the project Sustainability, Entrepreneurship and Global Digital Transformation. Follow me and my colleague Paul Wilches to the thriving capital of Mexico City. We dive into the world of sustainable digital entrepreneurship and explore how innovative business models and cutting-edge technologies are driving positive change in Mexico. I will now talk with my colleague Paul Wilches, author of a discussion paper on sustainable entrepreneurship in Mexico, about his research and findings. So, Paul, you researched the potentials and challenges of sustainable entrepreneurship in Mexico. What were the key questions of your study?
Hi, Christian. So the study looks into how entrepreneurs in Mexico deal with the macro trends of digitalization and sustainability. So countries around the world have their agendas on these imperatives, and Mexico is not the exception. The first one deals with how to use the potential benefits of the different digital technologies to impulse the economy and to change and improve different sectors. At the same time, and this is the second imperative, they have to pay attention to current sustainable development goals, which are a demand from the people, and to current environmental and climate crisis. In this study, we focused on the climate crisis and efforts to tackle it. To reach these goals, we count on entrepreneurs because they are often seen as agents of change. They create new ideas for products and services. That being the case, in the study, we looked into this new kind of entrepreneur, the sustainable digital entrepreneur in the context of Mexico, to find out what are their characteristics, and especially in the terms of challenges that they go through.
So, which are the key challenges you identified for sustainable entrepreneurship in Mexico?
Yeah, we identify key challenges in three dimensions. The first one is on the entrepreneur, the second one on the entrepreneurial process, and the third one is on the ecosystem. So regarding entrepreneurs themselves, accessing entrepreneurial possibilities is a key challenge. One example to this is the high costs for specializing in either digital and sustainable topics. Also, nurturing on entrepreneurial mindset is essential. As it was described that taking risks can be considered arrogant in some places. On the entrepreneurial process, a key challenge is to create capabilities for the increased complexity of dealing with these different topics. Building the right team with the right expertise is difficult, for example, but also defining responsible growth and investment for the company. On the ecosystem, we find the need to promote sustainability, science, and technology, support the increased collaboration and connection of the ecosystem participants, as well as establishing an institutional framework as key challenges.
Okay, and what kind of institutional frameworks or government support programs could help to overcome these challenges and to foster the role of sustainable entrepreneurship in Mexico?
Yeah, the role of the government has been identified in previous studies as instrumental in the adoption and survival of these kinds of startups. Support is needed to address market imperfections. For instance, the market does not yet take into account the true cost of the environmental impact of products. So many of the times, the most affordable products pollute more and have more negative impacts on the climate. So sustainable digital entrepreneurs in Mexico would benefit from policies and conditions could be on the form of subsidies, for example, that let them compete more in the market. At the same time, the government should create opportunities to include more ideas, more entrepreneurs into the ecosystem and support them through their journeys. Mexico had an institution for this at the national level, but it was closed in 2019. So this limits the participation of people to those who are in big cities or close to these resources. One last thing to consider is that these transformations require a lot of awareness and education, and they should be part of a larger and more comprehensive and united plan in the direction of the country.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Still a lot of challenges ahead to address, but also a lot of opportunities. Thank you for your time. I'm now talking with Nadia Stand, co-founder and impact catalyzer of ZackBHub. Thank you for taking the time for this conversation.
Thank you, Christian, for having me. It's always a pleasure to share about sustainability, entrepreneurship, and impact in the world.
So with ZackBHub, you want to fight climate change in the startup sector. Could you tell us a bit more about what you do and how this is actually working?
Of course. So ZackBHub, I'm going to start with the name. ZackBHub means paths in Maya. And we believe that every company, every startup, every organization has their own path towards sustainability. And as ZackBHub, we're a hub of sustainability strategists, and we try to find these paths with different organizations. So for startups, we work directly with them. We've worked with them in incubators and accelerators, and we've also worked with larger organizations who finance and organize programs to support these startups, because sustainability is something where everyone can take their own path, not only startups, not only companies, and they can also intertwine. So we really believe in connecting those paths where larger corporations can support startups, and by supporting them and going forward together, sustainability can really take action in fighting climate change, as you mentioned, but more in the sense of redefining the way we do business. It doesn't have to be a fight. It doesn't have to be something negative. It doesn't have to be something where we are fighting against something. We're working towards something. And we want to celebrate every action that has been taken in sustainability right now by these organizations, by also finding paths to empowering so that they take even more action to promote more sustainable ways of doing business.
Great. Really interesting. Could you tell
bit more about what kind of companies are you working with and what kind of sectors of sustainability are they actually active? So what are these companies contributing to sustainability, or in what sectors are they active?
In the last 3 years, we worked with the incubator and accelerator of CleanTech Hub, both in Colombia and Mexico. And here we had a variety of startups in water, circular economy, agrotech, and these are just some of the sectors where organizations can take action. Right now, we are working even more closely with sustainable housing. So we're working with a think tank, the Sir Terwilliger Center for Housing Innovation. I'm not sure if I got that right in English, but it's from the think tank by Habitat for Humanity. And we found the 10 game changers of sustainable housing in Mexico. We found 10 companies who have a product or a service that can promote sustainable and affordable housing in Mexico. And this goes all the way to sustainable concrete that is made from residue found in mines, all the way to design architecture design, where it's passive design, where houses are placed in a certain way to reduce the use of energy. So as you can see, it's a broad range of sectors, a broad range of solutions, can be products, services. Basically, any business can be sustainable.
So talking about startups and entrepreneurs, where do you see the biggest difference or the biggest potential in startups, unlike big corporations or the government sectors? What kind of advantages does the startup sector has in that sense to really advance sustainability goals?
I think two of these come to mind right away. One is the purpose, and the reason why a lot of these startups are being born is connected to sustainability. Whereas a lot of the larger corporations, their purpose when they started was not sustainability. So combining their current purpose with sustainability can take time. It becomes a transformation process. Whereas startups, they are born knowing that they are going to be sustainable. Their reason of being is to generate an impact. So that makes it much easier to connect with new ways of doing business. And the second part, I think, where startups have an advantage versus larger corporations is the entrepreneurial mindset. The entrepreneurial mindset, and we can talk about all the methodologies out there, but I'm just going to sum that up into acting fast, being more comfortable with failing, and doing that quickly without using a lot of resources. So this makes it very much more agile than a larger corporation. Just thinking about the corporate structure where you have to find, and this happens a lot in Latin America, Colombia, I'm Colombian, so in Mexico, and I've seen this a lot, 3-4 signatures of different hierarchical levels to approve a new product launch or a new entrepreneurship line. This takes much more time than a startup that says, let's try this, let's go out, test it in the market, boom, they got it, and then they can move much more faster.
Yeah, so way faster and more impact-driven or directly impact-driven. I remember this also from our conversations we had during our stakeholder dialogue. If you talk with all kind of entrepreneurs, you really see the passion of these people trying to make a change. But on the other hand, I also remember that there are a lot of challenges and constraints. So from your perspective, working with all kind of startups and companies, what kind of challenges and constraints do you see for sustainable entrepreneurship in Mexico? What are still the most hindering factors in that field?
The one, and I'm not going to say that this is the most important, it's just the first one that comes to mind, because we are facing this with some of the startups who were selected as game changers for sustainable housing. A lot of the sustainable solutions come from scientists, so they're highly technical. And when a scientist or a engineer or someone with a high technical academic background has a solution, they're very passionate about this. And then this poses two challenges for the startup scene in sustainability right now. One, they believe in science so much that they want it to be perfect. So the time for this to go out into the market takes much longer than if it weren't so tech-driven. And then on the second side, I mean, scientists and engineers don't necessarily have a business background. They don't necessarily know their way around the business world or the very highly sophisticated investment lingo that we love using just because it's become so normalized. So this creates a barrier between a lot of these great solutions not being able to forward as much, not being able to go out in the market, maybe because they don't know how to actually pitch these ideas. They don't know how to talk to investors, or they don't feel so comfortable because they feel like they're not speaking the same language. And I would say that this is not only in sustainable startups, but in a lot of startups that are looking for a change in technology. Right now, a lot of this is sustainability, but it's also innovation. And that also leads me to a third challenge. And I think this applies to all startups in the country. And we talked a lot about this, is how are we measuring success? So a lot of the, and I think that's going to change with all the recent VC moves in Silicon Valley. But as of a couple of months ago, and I would say a lot of VC funds still do this, success for startups is measured as how much money they are raising. And I'm going to say that again. We are measuring how successful startups are based on how much money they raise from investors. What we measure is what we care. If we are measuring something and we have a metric for that, that's what we're celebrating. That's what we're considering as important. And if what we're, the message we're getting out there is that the market only cares about how much money startups are raising. And then the question is, do we care about how many sales there are? Do we care that they are financially sustainable? Do we care about the impact they're generating? If these metrics are not there, then that's the message we're getting out there. So I would say that the third challenge is the way we're measuring success right now, where we have a lot of startups trying to focus solely on awards, recognition, fundraising, rather than getting these products out in the market and scaling the solution. I mean, more sales equals more impact and sustainability. And if we're not measuring that, then we're not going to achieve more impact.
Interesting. Yeah. So really changing the paradigms of success in that sense. And do you see, beside the startup sector itself, do you see any kind of programs or a state from the state side, anything which could change or support this change of perspective and more impact driven approach, or are there hindering factors also on a let's say institutional or governmental side, or what is your take on that?
Not as much, to be honest. And I'm sure if we do a deep dive, there are going to be programs. I know that there's the Secretaría de Trabajo in Mexico. My take on this, and again, I'm not Mexican, so I may be sort of, this is just my vision as an outsider of this. Their focus was not entrepreneurship, but they've sort of taken it under their wing. And there are some programs to incentivize some of the entrepreneurship. However, I do not see that this is focused on specifically sustainable startups. So I would say that I've seen a lot more programs from incubators. There's a lot of actors, a lot of embassies from different countries working here in Mexico, really promoting sustainable entrepreneurship and just a lot of solutions that really promote impact. And I would say I've seen this from embassies. I've seen this from multilateral banks. IFC is doing a lot of work on impact investing in Latin America to really bolster sustainable entrepreneurship. And I would also add to that a lot of organizations like, for example, Habitat for Humanity. They are nonprofits and they see startups as a way to really achieving their impact goals, because sustainable entrepreneurs and the entrepreneurs coming up with these solutions, they're experts in the problems they're solving. They're experts in generating this impact. So I believe that organizations are identifying this win-win relationship.
You just mentioned that you're from Colombia, so you might have an outside perspective on Mexico, but you're actually working in Mexico on the ground. So I think that's really interesting. This actually brings me to my last question. So with this outside perspective, Where do you see Mexico in 10 years in this sector, or where do you hope that the entire sector of sustainable entrepreneurship is in Mexico in 10 years, or where do you see also potentials, maybe unlike in other countries in Latin America, in Mexico?
I think Mexico has a great advantage, and is that the ecosystem is very, very, very active, and a lot of organizations have Mexico sort of in the center. It's the biggest LATAM market. So that just by all means makes it that it's much easier to scale once you have a good solution that has a great market fit. So I do believe that having a great market, having really interesting sources of funding, being so close to larger markets where these products could be exported, I would say that the startups today are going to become the new scale-ups that are going to be inspiring even more startups. I do believe that there's this sense of community in the ecosystem of support of larger corporations. In the last event we organized, we had Cemex, one of the largest corporations in Mexico, work side by side with startups. So for me, that's great. And I think that we are going to be in a world where large corporations, startups, and scale-ups are going to be all working together to find solutions, be it through entrepreneurship, corporate venture funds, but somehow all of them will be working together to solve the same challenges. And in my hope, I would say that we will not be talking about sustainable startups. We will only be talking about startups. And all startups will be sustainable just because they know that there are ways of doing business. There are going to be other ways of doing business that are fair, equitable, transparent, and definitely generate an impact.
Great. Thank you very much. So still a lot of work ahead of us in that sector, but also a lot of possibilities and opportunities. So thank you for your time again, Nadia.
Of course. Thank you, Christian, and everyone hearing.
I'm now talking with Juan Pablo Escobar Luque, CEO and co-founder at Civica Digital. Thank you for taking the time for this interview.
Christian, very good to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
So Civica Digital is a company offering digital solutions for the public sector as well as private companies. Could you tell us a little bit about what you're doing exactly and what kind of services are you developing?
Sure. And Civica Digital is a civic and government technology company. We founded the company in 2015, so around 8 years ago. We started the company with the mission to improve the way citizens and governments interact. So helping public sector organizations and institutions to become more open, responsive, and to deliver better public services by using digital technology. So that was our start. Right now, we serve our customers and partners in two ways. The first one is Urbem, which is our flagship product. Urbem is the software platform that helps local governments to build and launch their services online and to do it in a very easy and non-coding way. And the second, we have a technology services business unit. Here, we basically do software development. We build data platforms, we do API design and integrations, we do data analysis, engineering, visualizations. We also do service design and a lot of consultancy based on customer needs. So we can work with a local NGO or national NGO or an international NGO, but we can also work with municipal, state, and federal government agencies. And we launched Urbem in 2017. We launched the first version of our product. And since 2020, Urbem has been our main focus in the company, but we're still developing services with customers.
Really interesting. Yeah. So as part of our SET project, as I mentioned, we conducted research and organized events in Mexico, mainly focusing on sustainable entrepreneurship and climate. But the events, especially the stakeholder dialogues, have also shown that accessibility is a crucial aspect when it comes to digital technologies in Mexico. So I was wondering, how or what is perspective on that? How can your service improve accessibility to digital technologies or government services in general? And how do you make sure that people maybe not used so much to working with digital technologies can still access your service or can work with that? Because if I understand correctly, your services are directed at citizens, right? So what role does accessibility play in your work?
Yes, this is a great question and a tough one, because we definitely want to help that public services can be more accessible, and that's part of our mission, not just digital, but to be accessible. Digital services help increase accessibility, but right now I think the way we're doing it is mainly two ways how we're helping in this side. First is to, as we call it, the government physical office. We need to bridge the offline with the online. If you go to the government offices here in Mexico and Latin America, they're packed. So citizens, when first think on a government service, sometimes they don't look to Google or search engines for the information and accessing the service. This mainly because still more than 90% of government services are still accessed offline here in Mexico. So we thought, how can we bridge that offline support and service delivery that governments already have and all that infrastructure to connect it? So we started helping governments when citizens go to a government office. How can we help them finish that service online? If a citizen goes physically to a government office, how they continue managing the service on a digital platform or a digital service? Or if that citizen is not connected, how can we get them connected? Sometimes people don't access a digital service because they are in need to scan a document or even create their first registry. So for example, with a few local governments, we have helped them do brigades physically. They go where citizens are and generate this massive registration offering different services. And they have used our software and platform to do this. So for example, governments going offering massive civil registry services or will write in services. They have used our platform for this. And the second way, we were thinking about this and working about this is we have used messaging channels like WhatsApp. Here in Mexico and Latin America, WhatsApp is the most used mobile application. And we have been pioneers in using messaging apps and chatbots as a channel to connect with public services. Since 2017, we have used them for orientation, citizen reporting on issues, and started accessing services from channels like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger using AI technologies like NLU or natural language understanding or natural language processing. And since then, large language models the ones from OpenAI and others have become more mature and almost will be soon ready to use in these types of services too, for not just text, but also voice channels. And we believe this omni-channel platform and this omni-channel design for citizen services will be the way to go for digital services. So if a citizen calls or if a citizen goes to a physical office, basically they can be connected to the digital services also. And in the future, they may use the digital service or they may come back to a physical office, but basically have this great experience in any channel that they use.
And maybe zooming out a bit, you already mentioned that, but how do you see the future of the digital transformation or the potential of the digital transformation in Mexico in general when it comes to questions of accessibility, quality, access to services? You already mentioned a few of the points, but maybe where do you see the future in that field in Mexico?
I believe that and what we see is that every public organization or institution or government will be using a digital service to access and engage with citizens. I want to give another example, ¿Cómo vamos Nuevo León? Or in English, I believe would be major, how are we doing? O Alcalde, ¿Cómo vamos? It's an NGO here in Mexico that develops mechanisms for accountability and civic engagement. And they launched EVA one year ago. EVA is a chatbot that rates public parks. And they achieve like 70% of conversion rate when finishing a citizen evaluation. So 70% of citizens that just messaged the chatbot finished in less than 1 minute their citizen evaluation of that public park. And with geolocation, with pictures, video, and more. So all of this is using WhatsApp, but definitely connected with this great database that they are developing to develop public policy with that data, and also to giving and developing more accountability mechanisms for governments and majors here in Nuevo León, in the state of Nuevo León. So this year they're planning to start rating more city and public infrastructure, like public transportation buses and other types of public infrastructure. So I think this example is the way to go for non-government organizations, but also government organizations, to start using this type of technologies and this type of tools to generate more data, to generate more citizen engagement, to offer better public services. So still, as I mentioned, more than 90% of government services to citizens are digitized. So citizens cannot access them in a digital service. They have to go physically. And this definitely generates this higher barrier to entry to this type of services. Can be a person, can be a company, can be a person in need for a public benefit, and other different services.
Really interesting. And do you think that that digital tools could also help to maybe regain trust or increase the trust into local governments, which, as I understood, is also a crucial aspect in Mexico, that through digital technologies and digital accessibility, people could regain the trust in local governments?
That's our ultimately theory of change. We believe that in 10 years, at least more than 50% of these type of services are online. Maybe in 20 years, our expectation would be that more than 90% would be accessible via a digital service. But this, in the end, this will help transform the economic and social development, the well-being and the quality of public services, and ultimately the trust in citizens from citizens in their governments. That's our mission as Cívica Digital, and our ultimately goal.
Yeah, that was actually my last question. You kind of almost responded to it. maybe to extend a bit on that. So what would be your expectation, or let's say, what would be your hope for the public digital sector in Mexico in 10 years? So where do you see the sector in 10 years?
That's a great question. And I think here in Mexico and in Latin America, we always talk about the examples of UK or the examples of Estonia, examples of Singapore and other countries that have been able to digitize or basically more than 95% in some countries of government services are accessible online. And here we see that like in a very distant future. So our mission and my expectation would be to help accelerate that digital transformation, not to be in 20 or more years, but to be in the next 5 to 10 years. And that citizens, when think on accessing a government service, don't think on bureaucracy, don't think on corruption, don't think about missing or losing their time and being frustrating every time that they need to interact with their government, either being a municipal, state, or a national government agency. So to develop this trust, to develop this fast way to access the services and to be basically ubiquitous and to be in present on every type of service that you want to access, either be for a labor department, for an economic development department, for a social development department, even if you want to register your kid for school, if you want to access a benefit for mothers working mothers that need to access to benefits, or a small business trying to access a microloan, this to be easier, accessible, and have a better experience. I believe this is more than one public administration cycle. Sometimes public administrations here, municipalities that last 3 years, they cannot invest, or sometimes they don't have the time to invest in this type of digital transformation projects, but because they're always working on what's the most urgent pressure thing. And I think since the pandemic, COVID, this definitely changed the culture and the minds. But now we need to move to execution and to implementation mode, and that's what we're doing right now here in Cívica Digital in Mexico. So my expectation definitely in 10 years would be that we are at least halfway there.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I hope so as well. And wish you all the best with your company, with Cívica Digital, to support this process of the digital transformation in Mexico. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Christian.
Our conversations with Nadia and Juan Pablo, as well as our research in Mexico, have shown the huge potential of sustainable entrepreneurship to mitigate climate change. In contrast to big corporations, entrepreneurs are less inhibited by organizational barriers and can react faster to societal change. But in order to scale the impact of sustainable entrepreneurship in Mexico, there are still several challenges to be addressed. Access to capital and a fragile economic reality are often hindering factors for a broad and diverse entrepreneurial ecosystem. With the right institutional frameworks and governmental support programs, entrepreneurs could take a leading role in the digital and sustainable transformation of the society in Mexico.
This podcast is part of the project Sustainability, Entrepreneurship and Global Digital Transformation, SET. Since November 2021, our project team has been developing innovative research formats and dialogue events in exchange with local actors from academia, politics, business and civil society in 8 countries worldwide. The project is funded by the Deutsche Gesellschaft für internationale Zusammenarbeit on behalf of the Federal Ministry for Economic Cooperation and Development. This podcast was edited by Marie Blümel, Christian Grauvogel, Moritz Timm and Ann-Christine Ziesemer. Scientific input by Stefan Bohn, Georg von Richthofen and Fabian Stefani. Sound and recording by Alexander Triebsees.